This week on the Hall of Very Good podcast, we have New York Times best-selling author Jeff Perlman. I'm the devilishly handsome Lou Olson.
And I'm Sean Anderson. The Hall of Very Good podcast starts right now.
The National Bobblehead Hall of Fame and Museum is coming to Milwaukee, beginning with a preview exhibition January 22nd through April 30th. With members from more than 40 states, momentum is growing, and you can join in. Become a founding member today and get great benefits, including two exclusive founding member bobbleheads. Visit bobbleheadhall.com for more information. That's bobbleheadhall.com.
So, Jeff, boys will be boys. I have to tell you, I'm a Packers fan, and I have nothing but contempt for the early 90s Dallas Cowboys. But you wrote this very popular book. Is it the same thing with Cowboys fans with your book as it is with Mets fans?
I don't think so, because I think the Cowboys have had – it's sold really well. But I think the Cowboys have had so much success and so much glory, that, like, it's not like – I mean, they were special years. That dynasty was special. But so was the Tony Dorsett, Roger Staubach years. So was Don Meredith. So was Drew Pearson. They were just like, there's a lot to pick from with the Cowboys. So it sold really well. And the stories were, some of the stories were really good and kind of interesting. But I just don't think Cowboy fans rallied around that era in the same way Mets fans rallied around and still rally around 1986.
I wonder why that is. Because even though I hate them, I mean, just cantankerously hate them, Troy Aikman and Emmitt Smith and Michael Irvin and Leon Lett, those guys are all, the greats of football, historically. And so you would think that that would be a team that they would gravitate
towards. Well, I mean, I think part of the thing is this. The 86 Mets still came along in a time when athletes could be very relatable. This sounds like some bullshit that, someone would spew, but I actually really believe it. 86, the Mets, New York City was this grimy shithole. Ed Koch was a mayor, spray paint everywhere, graffiti on the subways. It was just a crappy but cool but crappy place to live. And the Mets were this crappy group of scumbags. They really were. And they would be out at the bars and they would, you'd see them, whatever, walking down the street or, they'd sign autographs for hours. They'd be getting drunk. There was a real relatability there with the 86 Mets. And I don't think, Michael Irvin, had all these demons and everything. He certainly wasn't relatable to the average fan. Emmitt Smith, pretty arrogant guy, not so relatable. Troy, and a little bit arrogant, not so relatable. So I just think the Mets were really relatable.
After you do The Bad Guys 1, you go on, you write about Bonds and Clemens. So speaking, you've kind of got this, you had the Mets, you had the Cowboys, then you go to Bonds, then you go to Clemens. Yeah. I mean, what? You see, there's kind of a, it's kind of trending towards a certain way. I mean, what? Well, okay. Bonds first.
Yeah.
How does that?
That was the best response ever.
What are you trying to say?
How does that come about? I mean, is that something? Did you pitch, I want to do Bonds? It's like this natural progression, where you're kind of, you're going into these, this certain types of people.
I know,
I guess.
Wait, I got to say something here. People are always ever since I wrote the Rocker story, people have been oh, here's the guy who writes about controversial figures or blah, 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 blah. First of all, who exactly am I supposed to write a book about? You know what I mean? Okay, instead of Bonds, I could have done Jeff Kent, but who gives a crap? Am I supposed to write about boring people? It's actually really funny. Does anyone really want to read the Derek Jeter book? a guy who no one makes serious about it. Connor wrote a book about Jeter. It was really good. But, that's not what I want to write about. I want to write about really interesting people. And to me, Bonds was fascinating. And I love, that experience. Writing about Bonds and reporting Bonds was so interesting. And he's this guy who's really smart, but really dark, really arrogant, had this awful childhood. His father, Bobby Bonds, was a horrible, horrible role model. He's just really interesting, And the thing that, Bonds, Clemens, people group those together just as far as my books.
Yes.
And they couldn't be more farther apart. Clemens was just a big dumb lug. It's the one book I did not enjoy at all. Not at all, but did not particularly enjoy. He's just a doofus of a man. Who thought about baseball and breasts, and maybe I could eat and go to the bath. That was it. And Bonds, no introspection. And Bonds was full of introspection, he was just a really bad guy and a really arrogant guy, but that made him really interesting.
Okay, see, all right, good. All right, you answered kind of where I was hoping to get, because that's what I was wondering, if it was something where people said, okay, we want to do this, and Jeff Perlman's the guy to do this, you know, or if it was...
Those are my two worst-selling books. So
really?
Those are, it's not like... well, what happened was the Bonds book I thought was going to be my biggest seller. I still think it might be my best book. But it came out 2 weeks after Game of Shadows, the other Bonds book.
Gotcha.
And that thing was a runaway bestseller and an awesome, awesome book. So that was it for that. And then Clemens, I think people just fed up. I think people just tired of steroids and assholes.
So your Bonds book got grouchoed. How Groucho Marx died right after Elvis Presley and nobody recognized it.
Yeah, I would say that's...
That is
if the Game of Shadows book was Hall, my book was Oates.
Okay. All right. You know what? No. I'm going to jump. The very last thing I wanted
but
to
Oates
ask
can
you.
Sing. Oates can sing, I just want to say.
No. Okay.
I'm not laughing about that. I'm just laughing about the Hall & Oates reference.
And Lou's laughing because he knows what's coming, because I wasn't going to let you leave this, and I still have more stuff I want to talk to you about, but we're going to jump right into this, because I have on my notes, we can't end this without knowing about your ultimate Hall & Oates playlist, because I know that you and I both share a fondness for Hall & Oates.
Because they're the greatest freaking rock and roll group of all time. I mean, maybe not. But they're the greatest rock and roll duo of all time. Maybe not. But they're really good.
All right. I mean, I can't argue with any of those points. I mean, I could have initially, but then you retracted them, making it impossible for me to disagree.
You know, I always want to say greatest rock and roll duo of all time, but like Simon and Garfunkel, I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Well, rock and roll, though. I mean, you could put them in a couple different categories.
I know. Then you're basically a category of three. It's like he's the best 7'5" center in the NBA. You know?
I've always felt like Savage Garden is the best rock duo of all time. You guys know that one, right? Chicka Cherry Cola song? No, you guys don't know that one.
How about Philadelphia-based rock and roll duo?
Duos. Yeah, duos. They're definitely in the top five.
Who would win in a fight, Hall or Oates?
Hall. No, Oates. Hall is just the biggest fan of the West, man.
Yeah.
You know what? Bad. I'll tell you what. I'm the biggest Hall and Oates fan of all time. This is way off topic, but a couple months ago,
There's no off topic.
Oh yeah, right. Yeah. Okay, I came out here to Irvine, and the wife and I went. I wrote a blog post about this. Freaking Hall and Oates played for about an hour and 15 minutes. That was it. Hour and 15 minutes. You got 8,000 hits. You have a packed stadium, and you give me an hour and 15 minutes. Very disappointing.
Yeah. No, I remembered reading that over at JeffPerlman.com.
JeffPerlman.com was pissed off. I just thought it was like, I just thought it wasn't cool. You know, it just wasn't cool. They totally nailed it.
Yeah, that kind of sucks.
Hour and 15 minutes. Yeah, that seems...
Not like you're lacking songs, you know?
That's a good point.
Right. It's not like they just put out one album and you caught them on their first
tour.
You're
not Blind Melon. You're not Blind Melon with 8 songs. You know, you're Hall & Oates with 2,000 songs. Totally different ballgame.
Is it weird that when you said that joke about Blind Melon, it made me sad inside a little?
Oh, no, no, no. Here's the thing. Yeah,
I know, me too. It made me sort of sad inside.
All three of us love Blind Melon.
Is that true?
Yeah.
I love Blind Melon.
Yeah.
We were talking about the Meat Puppets before we got you on the phone.
Oh, yeah, nice. I think Meat Puppets and I think Blind Melon. Blind Melon,
yeah.
Love the Meat
Puppets.
I did part of them anyway.
I don't know. I love the Meat Puppets. So yeah, we were talking about that before.
No, we were talking our affinity for the early 90s, the early 90s grunge slash rock scene.
My wife and I just got to go see Chris Cornell unplugged, and that was just the best. Just
great voice. Great voice.
Yeah, just awesome.
You know what? 90s rock, to me, 90s rock rivals any era. I think early 90s rock was freaking awesome.
I would absolutely agree with that.
Way overlooked. Anyway.
I think it can hang with all of the quote unquote great eras of rock music for sure.
I agree. But people always look back at older versions, older generations and say, oh, that's when it was.
Yeah,
and
well, yeah, but rock. You know what? We're going to be the older generation soon. So we will have the final say and it will be 90s rock.
That's true. We'll be talking Stone Temple Pilots.
That's
right. Yeah. Geez.
That's also very sad. You know what was crazy?
Did you read the essay? Did you read the essay from his wife in Rolling Stone?
I did. I did read the essay from his wife.
Oh my God. Very interesting. Anyway.
Yeah. She's good. She should write more.
Yeah, that was very good. It was probably an asshole too, though, to be honest. But it was very good.
Yeah, it was good. It was good.
We got way off topic, but I love it because that's exactly. Well, you know what? No, and I'm gonna jump back in. I'm gonna jump back into 90s rock because two albums that I try to sell people. One of my favorite albums of all time, and I don't know if I'm preaching to the choir here or if I'm not, but I'm gonna get on the soapbox. Is Sweet Oblivion by Screaming Trees?
Yeah, that's good.
What's that?
No opinion. Nope. I saw Screaming Trees in concert once, but didn't stick with it.
Okay, I saw him twice. But and then another album that I think holds up, and this is where both of you guys can laugh me out of the joint. I think Cracked Rearview by Hootie and the Blowfish holds up, and I don't know how they just fell off the map so quickly.
There is nothing funny about Hootie's pain, Sean, first and foremost. I will never laugh at someone about their love of Hootie.
Oh, I don't love Hootie and the Blowfish. I'm just saying that album holds up. No. And when I see it in you know, the bin at like the discount books place or whatever it is, because there's 1,000 of them out there. You go anywhere, and it's like if you're a vinyl guy, it's when you go and you see Fleetwood Mac Rumors, and every record store has it because everybody had that album. Everybody had Cracked Rearview.
Yeah, because that and Jagged Little Pill like were on the top top 5 album sales for like an entire year straight. Just nonstop.
Forget that. Jagged Little Pill.
Oh yeah.
Top to bottom, that is a great album.
That is still my jam, and I am not embarrassed about that at all.
Oh, my God. So good. You know, I tweeted about that, and someone was like, where's your vagina? And I was like, what are you talking about? That is the best album ever. It is so good. That is, to me, it's a notch below The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill as far as female vocalists, just top to bottom, awesome album.
Jeff, we might be soulmates, maybe musically. I really like.
I don't put out on the first
like, tape. Oh, yeah. Okay, that's fair. I really like early '90s hip hop, just in general.
Yeah, that's
really,
a rule.
Yeah, I really like that era of hip hop music too. Like back when rhymes were like intricate and like told a story. And oh man, yeah.
Let me just say, my son Emmett is 9, and you know you're doing a great job. He recently said to me, you're listening to like Drake or something. And he's like, this just isn't as good as Tupac. And I was like, that is right, my boy.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. It's not. Amen.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's awesome.
I can't get my kids to listen to early 90s rap. I'm trying. I've got my son will listen to some Beastie Boys.
That's a good start.
But when it comes to music, what they want to listen to is, and we saw Foo Fighters this summer. I have an 11-year-old, so we saw Foo Fighters this summer, and he wanted to get there in time so that we could see Cheap Trick. So I'm teaching him right. And
Cheap Trick was opening for the Foo Fighters.
Cheap Trick was third on the bill. It was Urge Overkill, Naked Ray Gun. It was the Wrigley Field show. So it was Urge Overkill, Naked Ray Gun, Cheap Trick, and Foo Fighters. So we skipped the first two because we were on the train, and then. And then we saw Cheap Trick and the Foo Fighters. And so for either one of my kids to say that their favorite band is the Foo Fighters, I think I'm doing something right.
Yeah, that's good too.
That's very solid.
Yeah, if you want to get them into early 90s hip hop, use Outkast as a gateway.
I'm trying to use Tribe as a gateway.
Oh, Tribe is good too. Yeah.
Tribe is good because you have that jazz infusion. You could also, De La Soul is also good for that.
Oh, yeah. De La Soul is a very nice choice too. Yeah, those are all good. Those are all good gateway. It's gateway hip hop is what that is.
Yeah.
You're listening to early 90s college rock with Sean and Lou.
The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill is a really good one, too. I feel like the kids could get down on some Lauryn Hill.
It's so good. You
now that you said that, I'm going to go find that album after we're done. I have it. I'm going to go find it. I don't know where it is, but it's here somewhere in this house. I'm going to find that and listen to it.
Find it and put it on.
Yeah.
All right, let's get back to Bonds and Clemens, because I am curious. Did you have either of the players ever approached you about anything, or did they just say, you know what, screw it, we've got other stuff to worry about? Or did their people come and talk to you? Or
no, I had a little Twitter battle with Clemens. That was it. Some little snippy thing he said. That was it.
That sounds like something he would do.
Yeah. I think he was on Twitter for a week, and he was,
Hey, Jeff, Roger Clemens, nice guy.
You know what the funny thing is? I don't think he's a horrible human. I don't think he's a horrible guy. He's probably, I know, like you asked, you kind of in jest, but the truth of the matter is, there are very few people in the world, and definitely in sports, who are a complete jerk or complete, you know, we all have shades and we all have reasons we are this way. I found Bonds as nasty as it ever got. And he wasn't even nasty to me. You know, like a lot of people in sports, you hear this cliche so often from athletes. Like you ask them about someone like Bonds and they'll say, well, you know, he's always been pretty good to me. And I always feel like saying, yeah, but that's not really how you judge a character. It's not actually how he treats you or how he treats me. It's how he treats the guys holding the door for him, how he treats the waiter at the restaurant, how he treats the maid making his bed. Mm-hmm. And on those measures, Bonds was the absolute worst. So he was one of the real ones. He was terrible. And Rocker was kind of right there, too.
Yeah, that gets into a whole different – yeah, that's a discussion for another time because I could go off like with the Hulk Hogan thing from earlier this year where it's like, well, Hulk Hogan always seemed like, well, yeah, because you know what? You weren't talking to him when he was sitting just hanging out with the fellas or, you know, pillow talk with some lady. Yeah, when he's out doing meet and greets, he's not saying terrible shit.
I feel like one of the mistakes I made early in my career as a journalist, as a sports writer, was like Torrey Hunter, I mean, bad example, it doesn't even matter, like Torrey Hunter or Mike Sweeney or someone would give me 20 minutes of time and be nice. And I would be, he's a great guy. BS on radio. What's he like? Oh, he's a great guy. He's a great guy. I don't know if he's a great guy. Like, he was great to me, the reporter from Sports Illustrated who's writing a story about him. That doesn't necessarily mean someone is a great guy or a bad guy. You know, there's more to it.
That's a good point.
There is always more to it.
Who would be?
All I can say is my life is pretty plain.
Aww.
That's good.
That's adorable.
That's what we call a callback, everybody.
All right. So you're working on a book now, correct?
I am.
What are you working on?
You don't know or you do know?
Well, I kind of know.
That's a weird
answer.
See, now, I did not know that. Sean, did you not tell me that on purpose?
I knew because you've been back and forth to Mississippi, correct?
I've been to Mississippi and, of course, Green Bay.
Right. Gotcha.
Yep. And doing a bit of fun. Coming out next year.
Sweet.
Well, I will read your book because I'm curious to know what you think about him. I have very, very, very strange emotional ties to that man that are very unpleasant at times. Because I grew up – the only quarterback I had ever seen play football was Brett Favre. That was it.
Like, so, you never watched another game? You only watched when the offensive – when the Packers had it off?
Yeah, pretty
much. The game off.
Right. Yeah. Okay, that's fair. yeah, you got me there.
Closes his eyes, puts fingers in ears.
As a Packer and a Packer –
Bledsoe has the ball. I will close my eyes now.
Nope. I would always look away, especially that damn Bernie Kosar. I don't know why I just dragged Bernie Kosar into this. That was unnecessary. I apologize to Bernie Kosar.
With his awkward, funky delivery and his Jewish accent.
It's a very funky delivery. He was built like a brick, like a human brick.
It's built like something.
Yeah. But now I'm very excited to read your book because I maybe it'll help me deal with my issues.
That'd be great. Be your therapist. You can
be good. If you are my therapist, I'll be sure to let you know. I'll be sure to send you a check.
That's great. That'd be wonderful.
Now, Jeff, have you even done your dream book yet? I mean, because you tackled some pretty heavy topics.
No, I would say my dream book is probably Tupac.
Oh,
yeah,
that would be really.
I'd really like to do that.
Really fun.
Have you even started researching something? I mean, outside of.
No, I don't have a book deal. I need a book deal, but I would love to. I can't do it without getting paid. It's just, you know,
no, of course not.
Yeah, but it's my dream.
We didn't talk about the Quaz, your weekly feature. You're closing in on what 200? Is it 280 weeks?
No, I think 237.
237. Okay,
that's a lot, man. That is a life choice and serious dedication. Good for you.
I'm going for the world record, the world Q&A consecutive week record.
Do you know what that is? Is there like
is
an
that
end in sight for that?
I think I probably have it. Maybe I have.
You've got to have it, man. That's I suck at math, so I'm gonna not embarrass myself and just say that's a long time.
Thank you.
It's good. At least like 8 or 9 years straight you've been doing it.
No, it's been four.
No.
I was actually dumber than you on that one. I actually fell for the fake dumbness, but now I am the dummy.
No, I'm the dummy. who's on the Mount Rushmore of guests that you've talked to, and who do you want to get to talk to?
Well, the dream one would be Emmanuel Lewis. Like, he's not on any social media. That'd be sweet. Now Rushmore, of the four, of the 230 that I've done, I got to go Dukakis, Michael Dukakis. I mean, the guy ran for president, almost won. Yeah.
Right.
I go with John Oates, of course, because he's John Oates.
Right.
I'll go with my first one, which is Wendy Hagen, who played one of Kevin Arnold's girlfriends on The Wonder Years, just because she's
nice.
Number one.
Nice.
And I'll go with, just because they're so ridiculously offensive but kind of interesting, I did the president of the American Nazi Party.
Oh. Oh, we'll link to that on our site.
And I really debated it. I really debated whether to do it, and I did it, and it was actually pretty interesting. So I'll put them up there.
Wow.
Speaking of Nazis, have you done anything? Speaking
thank
of
you
Nazis.
Thank you for not doing that segue, Sean. I appreciate it.
Well, no, but I wonder, have you done anything with the Westboro Baptist Church? Because I'd like to see you tackle them.
That would be kind of interesting. I have not. Maybe I should reach out to them.
Yeah, I'm sure it would be interesting.
Possibly they're almost overly deliberate, though. They're too deliberate. It's not even like they wouldn't even be interesting. They'd just be insane. You have to have some self-awareness.
I was going to say, I feel like they're just like, no matter what you do or who you talk to, it always just kind of be the same speech. I feel like all their stuff is very rehearsed and prepared. It's not
genuine. It'd be like doing Kate Gosselin from John and Kate Plus 8 or whatever it is. Like,
ugh.
She's just some like lady who shows up on reality shows now. There's nothing really interesting.
Yeah.
Like, you know?
God, I got to be honest with you. I don't even remember the last time someone brought her up. So I completely forgotten about her. That's very sad, actually.
That's what I do.
I hate to admit that I know that she was just on Dancing with the Stars within the last couple of years.
Oh my God, get a life.
Yeah, you should be embarrassed.
Oh, hold on. I have never watched an episode. I work for an ABC affiliate.
Oh, that's right. That's not – all right, fine. That's not your fault. I mean, shame on you for knowing that and admitting to knowing that. But
It's my job to pretend like I know who's on the cast of Dancing with the Stars sometimes. Okay, all right.
Out of the Park Baseball puts you in charge of your favorite Major League Baseball franchise as you guide it through unlimited seasons of championship chasing. Trade players, sign free agents, draft prospects, set lineups and pitching assignments, call the shots from the dugout, and much more. If GMs and managers can do it in real life, you can do it in Out of the Park Baseball. Out of the Park Baseball also features historical play, online leagues, tons of customization options, and much more. So get hired as a virtual GM today.
It's time for the Friday Five. Still with us is author Jeff Perlman.
All right, Jeff, first question. If you could pick anyone to play you in a movie, who would you pick?
I would pick I guess I'd have to go Brad Pitt.
Beautiful. It's a great choice.
The similarities. The physical similarities.
Ah, that works. I wish I had those physical similarities. If you could eat one food for the rest of your life, what would that food be?
It would be Jell-O.
Oh, that's a good one.
Hold on. Follow up. Is there a favorite flavor?
There is. It would be the cherry Jell-O. Literally brand Jell-O, not the store brand. It has to be brand Jell-O, brand Jell-O.
Yeah. It's a good choice. The thing about Jell-O, too, is that you can at least get some variety in your flavors. So that was a good choice. Good answer.
You could also build a jelly castle. A Jell-O
that's
castle.
That's true. You could build a Jell-O castle. Jell-O castle. Yeah. That's smart. That's a good answer. Question number three. If you could have any animal as a pet – and it was fully domesticated, what kind of animal would you have?
I mean, I have a dog, and her name is Norma. And every time I walk in the house, she's happy to see me. So I can't say that about everyone in my family every time I walk in the house. But Norma is always happy to see me, so I just got to go with my royal little cockapoo.
That's a good answer.
My definitely like that on a carpet.
Yeah, they just get excited.
That's okay.
Yeah, they just get excited. It's excited bladder. Just, it happens.
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah. Question number four. Who do you find funnier, Amy Poehler or Tina Fey? This is just a person. Ooh. This is just who do you find more amusing? Everyone has a different answer. I'm just curious which one is yours.
I would go. I would say Tina Fey because I just think. I mean, I think back to her Sarah Palin, and that was just one of the greatest runs I think you've ever seen a comedian male or female go on, and still you watch it on YouTube, and it's still hilarious. But they're both great.
They are both great. I know it's tough to pick. That's why I try to stick with the hard hitting questions. Just like this last one. Who do you think has a worse job?
Hot dog is not a thing.
No, damn it! Oh God, I can't believe she thought of that before me, Sean. That's gonna drive me nuts.
It's all right.
I pride myself on my questions, as you'll find out by this last question. Who do you think has a worse job, Jeff? Alfred Pennyworth or John Arbuckle? Alfred Pennyworth, of course, is Batman's butler, and John Arbuckle is as Garfield. Just for the listener, they may not know. John Arbuckle is Garfield.
Yeah, I got to go with I always thought it's kind of crappy that Batman's supposed to be this big, empathetic guy, right? He's supposed to have his heart. And yet he has an 80-year-old butler bringing him, like, his brandy. You know, like,
it seems like it's
the other way around. I mean, I get it. You live in a mansion. That's cool. But, like, you don't have a social life. You're never dating anyone. You're taking care of this pampered, like, rich boy. He never does anything for you. Yeah, not so great.
But John Arbuckle has that ungrateful piece of shit cat.
I just like saying John Arbuckle. I won't lie to you. The thing about Alfred that really sucks is, like, you never see Batman get him a car, a sweet car. Like, the dude's 80. He's taking care of you your whole life. Buy the man a car. Yeah, buy the man a car, for God's sake. The Prius. He's Michael Caine, for God's sakes. Get the man at least a Mercedes. It's like you're hurting for money, you jerk. Selfish bat jerk.
That's a good question.
Yeah, I also would have picked Alfred Pennyworth. He gets the raw end of that deal. Except on the old 60s TV show, one time they let Alfred dress up as Batman and scale the wall. You know that cheesy thing they used to do where they would scale the wall? They let him do that one time on the old TV show, and that was a big – I remember being like, oh, good. He got to do something.
The thing about being Arbuckle is you never get lasagna. Maybe the guy loves lasagna, right. But the cat's always eating the lasagna.
Right. You just get to make it. Yeah, you get to make it and then never get to eat it.
Yeah.
And then whenever Nermal comes over, your life is just torn apart.
Just nice reference. That was good.
Just one nightmare after another. It's not Odie, it's Nermal. It's always fucking something.
All right, Jeff, where can people find you?
I'm on Twitter, Jeff Ferrellin. I'm on and my website, jeffferrellin.com, where you can read all about stuff like what it was like going to the bathroom yesterday. And I wrote today about how Michael Bublé should be boycotted for covering Mariah Carey's All I Want for Christmas Is You.
Did he really do that?
Yeah, horrible.
Consider the boycott in full effect.
That's a great Christmas song, and I'm a Jew. I don't even celebrate Christmas. It's a great Christmas song, and it's not even that old. Why is Michael Bublé playing it?
My wife would tell you that it is. My wife would tell you that is the single greatest original Christmas song ever written by her standards. Yeah, my wife swears up and down. But I only know one thing about Michael Bublé, and that is that Michael Bublé is Michael Bublé's number one fan. It's the only thing that I know about that guy. Because I've seen him on SNL a few times, and it just seems like he thinks he is just the best.
As my grandma used to say, that guy's getting laid.
That puts everything in perspective, Jeff. Puts all of life in perspective. Thank you to our guest this week. If you'd like to learn more about me, you can find me on the Twitter, at Lucifer Olsen. That's LOUC, as in cat, IFER. OLSEN. Sean, where can the people find you?
Thanks, Lou. As always, you can find me on Twitter at HOVG. And remember, head on over to our Facebook page, facebook.com/hollowverygood, and drop us a like. We'll talk to you later.
Later, boners.